in as we chat with Stephanie Tenenbaum, a kindergarten teacher using whole group instruction alongside small group learning. Stephanie has worked in a variety of settings and grade levels. We are excited for her to share her journey and what she has learned through her experiences. Stephanie, thank you so much for being with us today. We're really excited to hear from you. Before we get started, we know you're currently teaching kindergarten, but you've served in many roles. We would love if you could share with our listeners how your journey in education began and how it landed you where you are now.
Sure. Thanks for having me. I actually am a career changer. I started my career in marketing. I worked for about 5 years, and then I decided I wanted to go back and get my master's in education, and later went on to go study again and get my master's in literacy. So I started out as a third grade teacher for about 10 years, and I just couldn't leave third grade. I feel like it was the perfect fit for a long time. But I eventually, post-COVID years, took an intervention position working with students and mostly reading intervention, especially after COVID. That was really critical. And then I ended up, this year I am teaching kindergarten and my family moved, so I'm in a new district and I'm loving kindergarten, and I feel like it's really been great full circle to kind of see education in so many different grade levels and also just from different perspectives.
Yes. And I think that's so impactful. As you said, you know, different grade levels, different roles, that really does give you that perspective of the importance of really combining both that whole class or, you know, classroom instruction. And you've also served as a literacy specialist or an interventionist, and really making sure that those roles are really cohesive as we think about that. Sometimes, you know, we think, oh, I'm only a classroom teacher, this is all I'm doing, and the interventionist is over here, and this is what they're doing, when really we should be working together and thinking as we think about both of those roles. And even just the way we set that up, it's almost like that, again, that whole group versus small group. And we've been talking a lot about small group instruction in this series, and we know how impactful and how powerful that is. But we also don't want to ignore the power of whole group instruction. So as we think about that, as we think about both whole and small group instruction, can you share your insight and your experiences both as a third grade teacher and kindergarten? Because, you know, that's definitely going to be a different experience, I'm sure. When you're thinking about that whole group instruction, why is that happening? When is it a good idea? And what does that look like in your classroom?
Absolutely. I love that you asked me this question, because I've done a lot of reflecting on whole group instruction this year. I feel like it's been such a hot topic, and in some ways it's almost, you know, am I going to get in trouble if someone walks in my room and I'm not in a small group? And the first thing that comes to mind for me is that whole group instruction means that every student in the class is receiving direct instruction directly from the teacher. The teacher is aware of the material that's being covered, what the student responses were immediately in that moment. And I think that, you know, after thinking about it, whole group is really the only time when in the moment you can kind of get a gauge on what every single person is doing. Not to say that you can't go back later, but it is powerful to know, you know, in that moment, sort of an idea of what they're receiving and also kind of how they're receiving it. I think any lesson or instruction that can be done in a whole group should be done in a whole group. Beginning of the year, I think it would be crazy to be breaking up into all these small groups. There's so many things that have to be taught: rules, expectations, schedules, just kind of how everything runs. Particularly in kindergarten, I feel like it would be doing a disservice to the students to be giving some of that information to some students and not to others. So I think just really thinking about time of year and also how important it is for every student to receive certain information was kind of one of the first things that came to mind. Another kind of going back to that, if it can be done in a whole group, it should. One thing that I think particularly in those early years, K-1-2, I feel like SEL is so important. I feel like that comes in through whole group, through embedding modeling, through, you know, talking, allowing students to do those turn and talks. And so much of my SEL is taught through showing and doing. And I notice students then mimicking those behaviors and those, you know, those words in their own interactions. So I think that whole group's really great for that. Teachers are great at calling out positive interactions, kind words, positivity, hard work. Those are also things that you can really do in that whole group instruction. And I almost think of these as micro moments. They're powerful micro moments that benefit the whole group. And if you are in a small group, just being aware that not everybody is benefiting from that kind of direct feedback.
You know, and I think that's so powerful what you just said, right? You said many things that were really powerful, but you know, when you are in a small group, that is something to consider is when we're making the decision to work with small groups, we have to be conscious of what's happening with the rest of the students, right? So when I'm teaching whole group, as you said, anything that can be taught whole group that we know all students need access to. And I love that you brought in social emotional learning as well, right? It's not just the academic piece, but if our students are going to be ready to learn, they have to have, you know, the social emotional piece as well. But really that whole group instruction can be so powerful or is so powerful because we're giving access to all of our learners rather than just some. Now, with that said, you know, you talked about how within the moment you can kind of see what's happening with students. Now, I know often the argument is, oh, if you teach whole group, you actually don't know what's happening with students. You can't get the information or you're not sitting side by side. You don't exactly see what they're doing. But really, whole group, you do have that opportunity to take a look and kind of see what students are doing. It might not be that hard data, right? But it's more of that anecdotal or observation. Can you share some of the ways you do or are able to pick up on students' responses or how they're doing when you're providing whole group instruction?
Sure. So I would say I absolutely agree. I think with small group, there are some benefits that you can see as well. But when I am whole group, I'm listening in on a lot of turn and talk. So opportunities where I'll pose a question. And what's great about it is everybody can have a chance to participate and share something in a very short amount of time. We know from science of reading that oral language is so important. We know that that's a big piece of the reading rope. And I think whole group is a great way to do it because as a teacher, you can kind of monitor. You have to obviously set up those routines at the beginning of the year. How do we turn and talk? How do we stop? Who goes first? All of that fun stuff. But everybody gets to hear that language and everybody gets to speak. So I think that that's one way. Another way, I do a lot of drawing in the air, you know, if we're talking about a word and I want everybody to think about that vocabulary word, I'll say, draw what you think that word means. Or if we're doing phonemic awareness, first sound, you know, we might draw that letter. There's so many ways where I can see pretty quickly or hear and get an understanding of, you know, are most of the students or all of the students really picking up on this? Do they seem engaged? Are they actually like lifting their finger? Are they sharing responses? So those are just a few ways that I do it in the whole group.
That's excellent. And that really kind of brings me into the next question, right? So we know, yes, whole group instruction is powerful. Anything that can be done whole group should be done whole group. But we also know there's definitely a benefit to that small group instruction. And so as I'm listening to you talk about your whole group instruction and how you're able to kind of pick up on maybe, you know, some students that maybe you're not seeing the responses or, you know, those responses aren't correct or what they should be. You know, that's where I think, okay, here's where small group instruction has a place is so that, and it might not always be that way. It might not always be the students that need the additional support. Maybe it's the students that need that extension or, you know, they need to dig a little bit deeper and they can be challenged. But we would love for you to share what your small group instruction looks like in your classroom. How are you deciding what, you know, who's being pulled into a small group? You know, what's the length of time for that group? Do they all look the same? How often is that happening? And what are some of the topics? So big question, but feel free to just kind of jump in and share what your small group looks like.
Sure. So in theory, you know, I have slides made and they're really pretty with different images for groups and students are in groups to start the week. But of course, those groups are flexible. there's always a guideline typically with most schools or districts that, you know, we would like small group to be maybe a certain portion of the time. And so I'm keeping those things in mind. But I think the reality is that really impactful small group instruction, I believe, is flexible and it's based on what students need. So if I notice something in maybe a whole group or a small group on Monday, I'm using what I'm noticing. I'm using my anecdotal notes, my observations, and I'm constantly kind of making these prioritization lists of who do I absolutely need to see. And there's obviously data behind that. It could be, you know, behaviorally, maybe what they're showing me. A lot of the time it's unfinished work or just, you know, students getting to a point where they are unable to move forward without additional instruction. But the number one thing really for me of what it looks like in my classroom is it just depends on so many factors. It depends on maybe are there other adults that come in through my classroom, in my classroom throughout the day? Are there students that just need a quick check-in and then they can go off on their own? Sometimes I'll pull those students that need a quick check-in first for 2 minutes, just have them say to me what they're working on, what their plan is, and then I send them off. And then I might pull the next group to me that I know is pretty independent, do the same thing. I might keep one student and say, okay, you're going to stay because they weren't able to go off on their own. And then I'm going to pull maybe a group that does need more of that explicit, we're checking in and then I'm providing feedback or reteaching something. But I feel like this is the one thing that maybe doesn't get said. Like, I wish it was this perfect formula. And I think at the end of the day, it's really based on student need and it's really based on how things are going. And as a teacher, when you're with them every day, you see immediately, okay, in order to get to this point in writing or in what we're learning and reading, we can't get there if we haven't gone over this hurdle. Maybe the hurdle is coming up with an idea. Maybe the hurdle is sounding out a CVC word, whatever that is. There are points where you're like, okay, I'm stopping. I'm pulling these students because without this skill, they can't move to the next skill.
I love that you said that. While it would be nice for a perfect formula, it's not, and it never is. And I think the sooner and the more that we recognize that, I think our small group instruction would be more powerful. It would be more impactful, right? Because as I was listening to you say what this looks like, you're talking about pulling some kiddos for 2 minutes to set them up for success, right? So if I'm super rigid in what my small group instruction is looking like, and I'm like, nope, you know, it's group A, it's group B, it's group C. And, you know, oftentimes what that tends to look like when we have that rigid schedule, and I know from previous years of my own teaching, is like, oh, 20 minutes for this group, and we're pretty much doing the same thing. And then 20 minutes for this group, maybe it's a different book, but we're doing the same thing versus what my students actually need, which sometimes it might be just setting them up for success, you know, helping them manage the tasks or whatever it is that they have to do versus, as you said, which was so powerful, is, you know, sometimes it's they really can't move forward. They don't have the skills they need, or you know that you need to pull them in and really provide that more explicit, more intense instruction to set them up for success. And I think that's so powerful and really a shift in the way we think about small group. I think that's, you know, something that we've been kind of talking about through the series is small group instruction doesn't have to be, you know, group A, B, C, D, 20 minutes here and there. Some groups might be 5 minutes. Sometimes you may have one student in your group for one group and then another group too, because they need both of those skills. And so definitely a way to start to reshape and rethink. So as we're thinking about both, again, whole group, I think we're recognizing the power of that and then saying, yes, small group does have a place in our instruction. But really, hopefully, as educators are listening, maybe that bad rap that that whole group gets, we start to recognize that power. You said something early on is, you know, if somebody walks in my classroom and I'm doing whole group, like, oh no. And and I remember being an assistant principal and that, you know, if we walked into classrooms and it was whole group, I was like, why is this being done whole group? So hopefully we can start to think, kind of rethink that. But again, I don't want listeners thinking we're not saying small group is important. It is. So as you think about small group instruction and you're pulling those groups based on needs, based on, you know, data, both observation and data, What are some of the challenges you face as you're planning for that small group, right? Because I think that's a huge question of like, okay, so what are my other kids doing? How do I, you know, you talked quite a bit about SEL and, you know, classroom management and expectations. So as we think about what small group looks like, if I'm a teacher and I'm starting to kind of rethink, you know, my small group instruction, a common question would be, so what are the other kids doing? Like, how do I manage this? We would love to hear your insight on that.
Sure. I think that absolutely that is kind of the golden question is small groups. Absolutely. They're powerful. We know students are getting more dedicated attention, more explicit instruction, more feedback. But what about all those other students? If you actually calculate the amount of minutes that those other students are not with a teacher, it's a lot of time. I mean, it's subjects worth of time sometimes if you calculate it throughout the day. So for me, I think the biggest challenge is how do I make that time away from small group meaningful? And in kindergarten, it's challenging because you know that they can get distracted easily. I am not a teacher that just wants to put them on an iPad all the time. I know that that language piece is so important. You know, technology certainly has its purpose, but it has to be balanced in the sense of, you know, we're doing a variety of meaningful activities. So one of the things that I've done to kind of try to help with this challenge is I use small group time to try to teach routines that then students can go off and do in a small group without the teacher. And I'm not saying that this happened the first week of school. We're just kind of getting there. But I've recently taught my students, for example, we'll use the phrases, I agree, I disagree, and because. And we might have just done a small group instruction where we're reading a book about something and we've gone through some of the different skills. And then we're going to do some discussion around this. And then I want to be able to send them off and I want them to be able to not have to always do it with me. So I'm trying to model it and teach it in the small group and get them to the point where we have certain routines in place where they can do it. I think it's a little easier in the older grade.
Yeah, I was going to say your experience between kindergarten and third grade is probably a little different.
but they can, and especially yes. If it is skills like if we're working on phonics skills or things related to, you know, whole group routines that we've done, I can often put together an activity that's very similar to what we've taught and gone through together and then set it up so that they can go off and do it. I know that, you know, we're really lucky now that we have all these tools. You know, Seesaw, I can set up things. In math, there's so many hands-on activities. So my rule of thumb for my classroom is really if I see students are able to practice a skill and they're engaged, and I'm able to see work and that data that they're learning, then I'm going to keep that activity or I'm going to keep that. But if I notice that they're not, then that's a signal to me of like, okay, it's time to change that up. It used to be easier when we'd have these rotations and every day, in theory, it was like, okay, you do this rotation and then you go to this. But what I've noticed is that sometimes you have to switch it up because you realize that it's not just one rotation that works for everybody.
Yes. And I love the way you talked about making sure that they can actually do it, right? So you're checking in. It's not just like I've created this and oh my goodness, I think about the work I used to put into creating centers and this, you know, but sometimes, you know, we'd walk away and be like, okay, they were all in their centers, but do I really know what was happening? Can I really check in and see that that was impactful for them? Or, you know, they weren't practicing it the wrong way, which then, you know, is going to have more of a negative impact. So checking in, making sure this is something that is the practice that they need, the repetition that they need, but they're able to do it. I think that's so important. And you talk so much about oral language, and I think that is so critical. You know, we know the big five, and I think, you know, oral language is the piece that's missing. It really should be the big six, and giving students that opportunity to build that oral language and giving them, you know, the sentence stems and the vocabulary and the language, even when they're not with you, I think is so impactful because that's really that transfer that we want to see. Well, I have loved getting to hear what your classroom looks like with whole group and small group. As we wrap up, if there's one thing that, you know, educators listening are going to walk away with, if they're just kind of listening to this, rethinking, and they walked away with one key takeaway, What would you want that to be?
That's a great question. I think the takeaway for me is just that there's no right or wrong, that whole group is always the answer or small group is always the answer. I think they both serve their purpose. And I think done together, I feel like that's the answer. That's what's really powerful, is that you need both. And I think it's okay, as you're getting to know your class and your students and their strengths and their challenges, it's okay to play around a little bit with that ratio of what you are doing. Now, obviously, it could be taken to an extreme either way, but I do think that if you're a couple minutes over here or under here, there's a good reason for it, and you're serving students' needs, that's what you follow, because you could follow the number of minutes, but if it's not what your students need or it's not the right students, then it's not going to be impactful.
Oh, that is so powerful, and I think so helpful, because sometimes we do get stuck with those minutes. And as you said, we really should be thinking about our student needs. And so hopefully walking away kind of thinking, all right, whole group really serves this purpose, you know, and then this is where small group can fit in. And as you said, there's no one classroom that looks the same, right? Ever. We all know that if you've taught more than 1 year, you know, one year might look one way and the next is completely different. And so really taking into consideration what your students need and how you can best serve everyone's needs in the classroom. Thank you so much for your time today, Stephanie. We really enjoyed getting to chat with you.
Thank you so much. It was great to speak with all of you. Have a great rest of your day.
Be sure to subscribe and stay tuned for our upcoming episodes, where we explore literacy topics in a snack-sized, easily digestible format.